Welcome to the Guardian Mindset Podcast, presented by attorney Eric Daigle.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Guardian Mindset Podcast. I'm attorney Eric Daigle. I'd like to welcome you on behalf of the staff here at Daigle Law Group. Listen, I know it's been a while. I've been flat out across the country. A lot going on. But I had to jump back in, and I promise we're going to have a bunch more coming as I get into the fall area of 2024 as we prepare for our Use of Force Summit coming up in November. But boy, I had to take advantage of a hot topic that I'm a little concerned about for everybody, and the key one. And so we want to talk about election law and the issues associated with election law. You know, on this podcast, we want to spend some time discussing the critical intersection of law enforcement and community safety. Today's episode continues this tradition as we approach the November elections, focused on the pivotal role law enforcement plays in ensuring fair and secure elections. Now, listen, this is being taped about 30 days out from the election, that hopefully I can give you all some guidance and some operational soundness to be concerned about for everybody in your agency, because this is not something that we've dealt with over the years. You know, for generations, elections in the United States were remarkably peaceful. People in most communities went to local schools or municipal buildings to cast votes in elections organized by counties and staffed largely by volunteers and temporary workers, often who are retirees. But the key point of this podcast for everyone in your organizations is that now is the time to drive home the point that officers have an important role in preserving democracy. So how did we get here? I got to give kudos to Kara, who did a tremendous amount of research here and also put together a resource page for you, which I'll talk about as we get to the end of this podcast, because this information needs to go out to our people across the country to be aware. And as I've been preparing for this podcast, there has been a tremendous amount of updates coming from multiple sources. The main one was that the Police Chief magazine for IACP in its September 2024 magazine is all about preparing for contentious elections. And if you haven't read it or looked through it, you might want to jump on it and look at some of the good articles that I'm going to talk about here. I've gotten some briefs and unclassified intelligence briefings for the Office of Intelligence and Analysis from Homeland Security for social media users promoting destruction of ballot drop boxes. I've also gotten updates from different areas, including the FBI and the United States Postal Inspection Service, on election official updates on suspicious letters, all of this stuff that we'll talk about. And a lot of this we put into our resource pages. So let me talk about a bunch of this stuff as we get going, and then we can dive into this here. So how did this start? Well, how do we get here? Let's start by discussing an important development from Georgia. And we know that this was a hot button topic in the last election. Georgia, as the first state to mandate election law training for police officers, Georgia is setting a new standard. This initiative highlights the importance of de-escalation, non-threatening conduct, and comprehensive preparation. Before we dive into what steps Georgia has taken, it's crucial for law enforcement to understand the broader context during election season and the issues that we are faced with. We do know some basic operational standards that law enforcement agencies face a dual challenge, that is, maintaining public safety while ensuring polling places remain welcoming for all voters. The balance is not always easy to achieve, especially given the current climate. A recent survey by the Brennan Center for Justice, conducted from February 20 to March 28, 2024, with 928 local election officials responding, revealed some alarming trends. First, reports of threats, harassment, and abuse remain high, reaching levels seen during the last federal election year. Key findings from this recent survey conducted by the Brennan Center for Justice found that 38% of local election officials report experiencing threats, harassment, or abuse. 54% are concerned about the safety of their colleagues and staff, while 28% are worried about their families. More than one in three local election officials have experienced threats, harassment, or abuse. Of those threatened, more than three in five have been threatened in person. So if you take a look at the main article in the IACP magazine, you know, issued by current President Wade Carpenter, chief of police from Park City Police Department in Utah, he writes that as the 2024 election approaches, all police and sheriff departments must spend time assessing and preparing for threats and protests that may take place in their jurisdiction during election season. Furthermore, as the assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump in July indicated, police must also prepare for possible lone wolf attacks carried out by individuals who do not represent any organized group. Police departments in the United States are not alone in these challenges. Law enforcement organizations and democratic organizations around the world grapple with similar disruption, disinformation, and misinformation that have become so prevalent in recent times. In the United States, one risk is that extremists in some communities, possibly supported by outsiders, may attempt to disrupt a local vote with the hope of casting doubt on the legitimacy of the election's outcome. As Chief Carpenter states, this means that police officers performing the seemingly mundane task of assisting election staff ensure that ballots and critical electronic equipment remain secure may be key to ensuring our democracy remains viable. You know, we know that what is critically important here is that the officials who run elections and the workers they employ must remain safe. And this is no small task. So let's start with understanding the threat landscape. To fully grasp the challenges associated, it's important to understand that the types of threats election officials face. These threats can occur in person, over the phone, via email, or online. They often involve overt references to physical safety. Some threats are direct, while others are more indirect, such as swatting incidents designed to create fear and chaos. For example, in January, in Jefferson City, Missouri, police responded to a false emergency call claiming that a man had shot his wife, was armed with an AR-15, and planned to kill himself. The target of the swatting incident was Jay Ashcroft, Missouri's Secretary of State, who was simply preparing for a workout at home. Since December, at least three other swatting incidents have targeted senior officials' homes in states like Maine, Georgia, and Virginia. Swatting involves making a false report of an emergency to provoke a police response. This tactic can be terrifying and dangerous. The January incident involving Jay Ashcroft is a stark reminder of the lengths to which some individuals will go to intimidate and harass election officials. The Election Threats Task Force, established by Attorney General Garland in June 2021, collaborates with law enforcement to investigate and prosecute threats against election workers. Despite some prosecutions, the number remains small compared to the thousands of reports submitted to the FBI since the task force inception. This limited response is partly due to concerns about free speech under the First Amendment. So what do we need to focus on? Well, I think the direct aspect of training that I want to take out of this podcast is balancing free speech and safety. And this goes as far back as Supreme Court cases from 1969, Brandenburg versus Ohio. And the challenge of balancing free speech and safety is not new. Cases like Brandenburg versus Ohio in 1969 and Virginia versus Black in 2003 have established critical precedents. Brandenburg set the standard that speech can be punished if it incites imminent lawless action. Virginia versus Black clarified that intimidating speech, like cross-burning with the intent to intimidate, is not protected. Additionally, Watts versus United States in 1969 differentiated between true threats and political hyperbole, emphasizing the context of the statement. In Watts, the Supreme Court ruled that a crude political statement at a rally did not constitute a true threat. The context, the reaction of the listeners, and the conditional nature of the statement were key factors. In Alonis, A-L-O-N-I-S, versus United States in 2015, the Supreme Court further refined this by requiring proof of the speaker's intent to threaten, rather than just how the message was perceived. Most recently, in 2023, in the Supreme Court case Counterman versus Colorado, states that speakers cross the line when they view or consciously disregard the risk that their communications will be viewed as threats. A true threat is defined as, quote, a serious expression of an intent to commit an act of unlawful violence to a particular individual or a group of individuals, end quote. Intimidation is defined as a true type of threat, where a speaker directs a threat to a person or a group of persons with the intent to place the victims in fear of bodily harm or death. Authorities must balance legitimate free speech concerns with their urgent duty to protect those conducting elections. As the Supreme Court clarified in Counterman versus Colorado, the speaker crosses beyond the First Amendment's protection when he knows of or, quote, consciously disregards a substantial risk that his communications would be viewed as threatening violence, end quote. The Watts factors refer to three elements identified in the Supreme Court decision Watts versus United States in 1969 to distinguish between protected speech and a true threat. The three elements to look at in this are, one, the context of the statement or statements in question, two, the reaction of the recipients or listeners, and three, whether the threat was conditional. In Chaplinsky versus New Hampshire in 1942, we're going way back here, the Supreme Court held that fighting words, those that inherently cause harm or are likely to result in an immediate disturbance, are not protected by the First Amendment. The challenge of ensuring safe and fair elections also extends to voter identification laws and polling place regulations. As we saw in the Supreme Court case Crawford versus Marion County Election Board in 2008, the Supreme Court held an Indiana law requiring voters to present photo identification, ruling that the state's interest in preventing voter fraud justified the slight burden on voters' rulings. Regarding political apparel at polling places, the Supreme Court in Minnesota Voters Alliance versus Mansky in 2018 struck down a Minnesota statute banning political apparel at polling places. The court found that the law, too vague and broad, lacking clear objective standards for enforcement, thus violating the free speech clause of the First Amendment. And finally, in Burson versus Freeman in 1992, the United States Supreme Court upheld a Tennessee statute prohibiting the solicitation of voters and displaying or distributing of campaign materials within 100 feet of polling place entrances. The court ruled that the law was narrowly tailored to serve a compelling state interest and in maintaining order and protecting voters' rights. These cases provide a framework for law enforcement to understand and navigate the complex landscape of free speech and election security. They highlight the need to balance protecting individual rights with ensuring public safety and maintaining the integrity of the election process. We could dedicate this entire episode to discussing the First Amendment implications, but here at DLG, we offer numerous free resources on the First Amendment. You can find that resources either through our First Amendment Summit, that is also in recordings that are placed on our learning management system called the DLG Learning Center, and also in the article section of the DLG Learning Center. So let's circle back to this issue, to Georgia's proactive approach to election security. In collaboration with law enforcement and election official, the Secretary of State's office conducted tabletop exercises in several counties. These exercises, facilitated by the Georgia Secretary of State's office and the Georgia Emergency Management and Homeland Security Agency, aim to enhance coordination and preparation for potential election-related incidents. Chris Harvey, the Deputy Director of the Peace Officers Standards and Training Council and a member of the Committee for Safe and Secure Elections, played a vital role and a pivotal role in these exercises. By simulating a real-life scenario, these tabletop exercises provided election officials and law enforcement personnel with valuable insights and hands-on experience. We know that the thing you should be focusing on right now in your department is building a framework for collaboration. What was learned in the success of the Georgia's initial tabletop exercise was to lay the foundation for a series of similar events planned throughout 2024. By engaging in these simulations, election officials and law enforcement personnel gained valuable insights and hands-on experience, enhancing their preparedness and coordination in the face of evolving threats to election security. Election officials and law enforcement professionals each uphold essential pillars of our democracy. Mutual support creates a secure path forward. Across the country, hundreds of thousands of people play a role in administering our election, keeping them free, fair, and safe. A collaborative approach increases security for election officials and our democracy. So, while taking a look at all of the resources throughout the country, let's see if we can make this clear and break down for you what you and your agency can do now to prepare for election season just a month away. One, start planning early. That's the most important. Make sure that we're having these discussions with roll call training and providing resources to our supervisors to be able to handle the issues that are coming. That leads to number two. Help your team understand why. Clearly explain the scope and the gravity of the threats, emphasizing the negative and potentially dangerous impacts on our communities and democracy. Hold interagency tabletop exercises with those running and protecting elections. Partner with state and local election officials to build trusted relationships with community groups. Provide information on recognizing and reporting threats to law enforcement. Due to the magnitude and scope of this problem, additional policies, written resources, and most importantly, training may be necessary and instructive. Support election officials by providing security assessments and recommendations for their election sites, offices, and residences. Establish a notification system to alert personnel when previously threatened elected officials encounter new public safety issues. Based on your security assessment, work with elected officials to secure necessary protective details, whether provided by your agency, another agency, or alternative means. Avert election-related threats from escalating into violence and deter criminal activities by investigating threats and holding perpetrators accountable. To counteract the rise of political violence, ensure that there are repercussions for such actions and convey the message that political violence will not be tolerated. And most importantly, maintain professionalism. Encourage all personnel to leave personal politics at home and focus on their professional responsibility to uphold the integrity of the election process. What we do know is that by working together, people can deal with the focus of safety in its application. We have very specific issues to address. in preparing for contentious elections. While the thing that we need to focus on is identifying the important role police play in defending democracy, making sure that we're focusing and assure that the public that the police are defending democracy. We need to take the time now to properly train and educate our officers, to coordinate with other law enforcement partners, to know the community organizers, and to make sure that we're taking care of the officers and staff that are going to be working in these areas. And specifically, a refresher on First Amendment application might be something that is very viable at this time in your analysis. So we have put together some resources, and the resources that we're going to identify are some of the things that I talked about. As I was putting together in this podcast and some of the areas that we want to focus on in the podcast, we did identify some of the challenges that we have seen to this point. Like I said, Homeland Security put out an intelligence briefing on social media users promoting destruction of the ballot drops in focusing on the fact that over the last 6 months, some social media users on forums have been sharing methods of damaging ballots and ballot drop box, including using road flares, fireworks, petroleum fuel, linseed oil, white phosphorus, cement or expanding foam. They talk about potential disruption methods, including placing false or misleading signage to indicate that ballot drop boxes are out of order, deploying decoy ballot drop boxes nearby, or inserting timed explosives into ballot drop boxes. They're talking about, on social media, tactics and techniques to limit and avoid detection, such as face masks, wearing gloves and hats, operating at night, avoiding use of license plates and personal vehicles, and leaving your electronic devices, such as cell phones, at home. States with more ballot drop boxes may be more at risk, and there will be more future legal decisions regarding the use of ballot drop boxes. May also be drive targeting, in such as cases in Wisconsin, where online discussions of sabotaging ballot drop boxes were followed by a Supreme Court decision legalizing the use of ballot drop boxes. We also know that history has shown that when it comes to ballot drop boxes in the 2020 general election, 2022 midterm election, and there were over 100 ballot boxes damaged in Southern California, and in Massachusetts, there was ballot boxes that were ignited and 35 damaged ballot boxes. An individual was charged with willful malicious burning and is undergoing a mental health evaluation. So what are the risk mitigation strategies that Homeland Security identified? Well, establish ballot boxes in secure locations where possible, monitor by video surveillance, coordinate with regional staff, request physical security, partnerships with state and local law enforcement, and making sure that ballot boxes have security features that prevent tampering and vandalism, and making our officers aware of the issues addressed with where ballot boxes are in your jurisdiction. In addition to that, there was something put out in September by the postal inspector talking about suspicious letters, and law enforcement is focusing on suspicious substances that are being placed in letters, specifically addressing election application, and something that we've seen in the past, and they're focusing on election mail handling procedures to protect against hazardous materials, and something you might want to have a conversation with members of your election officials in your jurisdiction. And finally, as we wrap this up, if you take a look at our election law resource page for law enforcement, which some diligent work was put together by Kara in putting this together, some of the things that could be there for your use come from many key resources. A Georgetown Law IACP resource addressing political violence, unlawful paramilitaries, and threats to democracy includes a fact sheet addressing political violence and provides guidance on identifying and responding to threats. The Police Executive Research Forum put out critical issues on policing series called Election Preparedness, discussing critical issues in election preparedness, including best practices for public safety, crowd management, and threat response. Polling place regulations put out by the National Coalition of State Legislatures, overviewing of polling places regulations across states, including rules governing election conduct at polling places. The Committee for Safe and Secure Elections put out a resource and support for safe and securing elections, focusing on collaboration between election officials and law enforcement. The state's United Democracy Center put out a document identified threats to election officials, an informational guide for law enforcement. This guide on addressing and mitigating threats to election officials, assuring their safety during the election process. A video that has been put out by the Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services, also known as the COPS Office, What's New in Blue, Preparing for Safe Election Season, a video focusing on addressing and mitigating threats for a safe election season. And finally, the Department of Justice put out a justice brief on election threats and identifying election threats. Law enforcement officers can benefit from additional training on election laws and related issues. Agencies are encouraged to use the resources provided by the organizations above to enhance their preparedness and response capabilities. All right, listen. I hope that this has given you some basis to share with the men and women in your organization to put focus on election law issues as we prepare for November 5th, 2024. I appreciate your time. And if you have any additional questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. And as we wrap up this podcast, we will do so as we have in the past. Remember, help those who need your help, protect those who need your protection, and most importantly, keep yourself and others safe. Be well, thank you. The Guardian Mindset Podcast is sponsored by the DLG Learning Center. You can find us at www.dlglearningcenter.com. On the Learning Center, you can find an extensive library of articles, webinars, and online training. Listen, if you find the podcast informative, I'd recommend checking out our weekly Path of the Guardian video training and our monthly supervisory continued education program. These programs can be purchased by single users or department-wide. And if you want easy access to articles and information, please download the Daigle Law Group app through either your Apple App Store or your Google App Store. And remember, help those who need your help, protect those who need your protection, and most importantly, keep yourself and others safe. Thank you.